Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition, a belated edition, of our Monday Night Raw report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing Monday Night's Raw at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Our apologies for not being able to get the show on Tuesday. The site itself was having site-wide problems connecting, and from what I'm told, there were very few, if any, shows that got through the past couple of days. So we really had no choice. They say they've resolved the issues. Let's hope they have, and we will move on. I do want to start, before we do our Monday Night Raw review, with a little bit of news, because there's a lot of conflicting news regarding what we had reported. Probably many of you didn't hear it because the show didn't upload, that CM Punk cut a promo on Adam Page, which was extremely derogatory. We had heard Page was sent home from the taping, told not to come in the building. Supposedly Punk has apologized in the text message saying, he shouldn't have done it. It got out of hand, and they claim he was not the one responsible for sending Adam Page home. But now we find out he had a confrontation with another AEW wrestler who called him the softest man alive when he was talking about AEW wrestlers being soft, and had him sent home. Ryan Nemethy, I think his name is. Then we find out Jungle Jack Perry there, he had a confrontation with him. He's apparently telling people what they can and cannot do on the television show. Tony Khan was asked about it and basically passed it off and said, oh, I'm glad everybody's concerned about our wrestlers. Just keep watching. There's big problems here. I don't care if you're telling me, oh, no, he would have invited him into the building. I would have invited him into the building if had I known, and I would have made up with Paige. Yeah. That's why he took the microphone and did what you did. Folks, if you believe this nonsense, there's turmoil here. Told you that CM Punk was poison. He's poison. He's absolute poison. And this is going to come back to bite Tony Khan in the ass, and I really don't care because he obviously has no idea how to run a wrestling federation when you don't even stick up for the people. I was told Matt Hardy was sent home, among others, one being head of talent relations. How about that? CM Punk don't want him there. Okay, well, give up your whole federation to the guy then. Your ratings are so good when he's there. It's incredible. You're almost getting 500,000, 600,000. My goodness. He's Stone Cold Steve Austin. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Dominic Mysterio is drawing more. And you're going to give your federation to this guy and get people upset backstage. So, hey, listen, whatever you want to do. And more you're going to hear, oh, it wasn't CM Punk's fault, because this is the typical modus operandi. He does a whole bunch of stuff, blames it on everybody else. It says, oh, no, I was very, very open to meeting with him and burying the hatchet. Yeah, that's why he grabbed the microphone to begin with, right? Because you're open to burying the hatchet. You figure the best way to bury the hatchet is to bury him after you've sent him home and he can't retaliate. And then send a text message saying, I'm sorry. And that's the equivalent of, I'm sorry I shot your dog. It's too late. It's absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. Anyway, let's get to Monday Night Raw. We start out with the Judgment Day coming out, minus Finn Balor. And they are met with J.D. McDonagh, who says he has a message from Finn Balor. And J.D. is met with the warmest welcome in the world. But they tell him, well, you go back and you send a message to Finn, who's going to be fighting Cody Rhodes later on. And he says, that's fine, I'll do that. And before he gets a chance to leave, Sami Zayn's music hits. Sami Zayn and him clash in the aisle. Judgment Day does nothing about it. They simply tell him, this is your problem. This is your business. You handle it. And we have the official first match of Monday Night Raw, where Sami Zayn takes on J.D. McDonagh, who hasn't really, I guess he's had a match or two. He hasn't lost. Well, he's lost this time. What ends up happening is Zayn, I guess, is not as injured as we thought. I guess his elbow's okay. Balor actually comes down, pretends that he's going to attack Sami Zayn to try to distract him. But Sami Zayn kicks out of the roll-up, and he ends up hitting the Huluva kick for the win, which, of course, then sends the Judgment Day into a tizzy, especially Damian Priest, who says, oh, I see, you can come out for J.D. McDonagh, but you can't come out for us. McDonagh suffers his first loss. It's okay, I guess, because he hasn't officially either became a part of Judgment Day, which it looks like it might happen, or him and Finn go do their own thing, which could happen too. You know, it's an okay opening, I guess, Tom. Not one of the better ones I've seen, but at least it's starting a new storyline.
Yeah, I was actually just going to say that they're starting a new storyline, even though we all kind of are, you know, hoping that they just break them up and keep, you know, Rhea and Dominic together. But it is starting a new storyline, and it's, you know, I might be in the minority here, but it's intriguing a little bit now. So which way is Finn going to go? Is he going to go with J.D. McDonagh? Is this a swerve? Is this like a – where is it – which way is it going to go? It's almost obvious that he's going to go with J.D. McDonagh, but they might throw a curveball at us. So it's intriguing. So they started his storyline, and I think that's the opening was good. I don't think it hurt J.D. McDonagh to lose. I think it hurt Sami Zayn's injury credibility. I mean, he was selling that anytime he tried to do something with his, you know, with his left arm that has the injury, he was selling it, which was good. But there was a point in the match where he did something spectacular, and it took both arms to do it. Yeah, I thought you were injured. That's amazing.
Yeah, that is a problem, but the WWE does that all the time. I don't think the loss hurt McDonagh. That's not my problem with it. My problem with it is it appears as though in some way, shape, or form, McDonagh is going to be accepted into the Judgment Day as another member. Once again, I don't have a problem with the members of this team. I have a problem with the fact that you're portraying them as some kind of a dark, gothic, whatever. You got two Irishmen who, if they stood on each other's shoulders, are not as tall as Olmos. And you've got a Puerto Rican guy whose T-shirts have the Puerto Rican flag on it. And you've got Dominic Mysterio, who's doing I'm a L.A. gang member type dude. The only person in this entire faction that looks remotely what the gimmick is supposed to be is Rhea Ripley. So, I mean, just forget the druids, forget the dark whatever and the purple handkerchief, forget all that crapola. And just go with whatever. Because you can't call yourself, you know, something dark and sinister and then be just what you are. It's, I don't know, it just seems dumb to me. However, it does look as though McDonagh's going to be introduced into the storyline, Mike. I think the deal behind this is they're figuring if we're wrapping up things with the bloodline quickly, we're going to have another, you know, multi-angled storyline, and they're going to try to use the Judgment Day.
Yeah, and that seems to, at least they're trying to work people in that you would have thought they'd have nothing for, right? I mean, McDonagh, you would have thought they would have had nothing for. Well, at least you're trying to work him into something. Now, you know, if you're going to do a street gang type thing, then you should have made this thing a street gang from the beginning. But again, when Edge was involved with it, yeah, it made sense and all that stuff. But once Edge left, it failed to make sense, right?
Yeah, it really failed to make sense. So, Todd, an okay opening, but, you know, I don't think the Judgment Day is ever going to have the same the same interest that the Bloodline has.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, the difference between those two factions, the angles, they got the Bloodline had more of a reaction than the Judgment Day. And like you said, when Edge was in the Judgment Day, it made sense. Now you got
it made a lot more sense. Yeah, it made a lot more sense. So then we get Imperium coming out. This is where in my opinion, is where the show starts falling apart. Gunther comes out with Vinci and Tizer and says he's 25 days away from breaking the record for being the longest Intercontinental Champion. Alpha Academy comes out. Chad Gable's got a problem. And the problem is his catchphrase is not going to work. You just can't say, hey, I'm out here, and I said, you stink. Thank you, every 2 seconds. It's just annoying, and it's not catching on. It's not catching on because it's a heel thing. You can only do that once in a blue moon if you're going to do it as a face, and that's usually when the fans are actually really responding, not when you just think you did something cool. So I don't think that's going to work. Vinci, who has been touted as, he could be the best one of all of them, and truthfully, he could be, really didn't put up that great of a fight, to be perfectly honest. I mean, he had some offense and things, but it was okay. It was a decent match. But clearly, although Chad Gable is very popular, clearly Otis is the more popular. And what ends up happening after Chad Gable wins? Gunther says, no, by the way, Gunther is terrible on the microphone. I'm sorry. You got to call it like it is. I know a lot of people like his style, and I do too, but he's terrible on the microphone. And he says, no, the night's not going to end this way. I'm going to challenge Otis. That's how he talks. Well, let me tell you something. I've lost a little bit of respect for Gunther. Not only did you not sell Otis, zero, but you didn't sell Chad Gable either. Let me explain. I've said this before on this show, so for the benefit of people who might not have heard it, let me say it again. When you are in a wrestling match, unless it's a squash match, you have to decide, what is it about my opponent? Even if I'm winning, what is it about my opponent that I have to sell? Well, clearly, what he has to sell about Otis is that Otis is stronger than me by a lot. Okay? That means when Otis bounces off the ropes and hits you, you go over backwards and upside down, and you look like, what the hell just hit me? That I did not expect. I usually am the one who overpowers people. No sold. Just stood there like, I'm just as tough as you. I'm just as powerful as you. Otis would hit him with something that you're supposed to crumble into the corner and act like you got hit by a steamroller. No sold. And then he was the one who did the power move, picking up Otis for the power bomb so everybody could say, oh, look how strong he is. So basically, you absolutely destroyed Otis's credibility. He's not even as strong, apparently, as Gunther. Bad job by Gunther, who then gets German suplexed by Chad Gable and doesn't even stay down for an eighth of a second before he rolls out of the ring and just walks away. That's his finisher. He just finished off Vinci with that. He doesn't even stay in the ring an eighth of a second. It's boom, let me roll out, and I'm okay. I'm just holding my head. Oh, okay. Well, I get it. You're Superman. Well, it's very, very easy to be considered a top guy when they just say, well, you're Superman. You sell nothing. You don't have to lose. Okay, well, then I guess you're going to be Superman. The same people are saying Roman Reigns never loses, and it's annoying. What about Gunther? He doesn't even, at least Roman Reigns sells. At least when Roman Reigns is done with a match, you're like, man, he should have lost. If it wasn't for this and that and the other thing, he would have lost. No, not Gunther. Gunther apparently is a better technical wrestler than Chad Gable. He's more powerful than Otis. He's more powerful than Drew McIntyre. He's tougher than Sheamus. I get you. I get you. So if he fights Rey Mysterio, he'll be more high-flying than Rey Mysterio, I guess. He won't sell a thing. Now, the last person who did this was Taz, who would sell absolutely nothing in ECW. And the wrestlers got pissed. So So Gunther better watch his step here. The right way to have handled this is you knew you were beating Otis. The right way to handle this was to tell that Otis is extremely powerful, and there's no way his body mass and my body mass match up. So he shoulder blocks me. I go down on my ass instantaneously and look like, what the hell hit me? Very nervous about doing any kind of power moves with Otis. But at the end, when I wear him down, I'm able to pick him up for a power bomb because I'm pretty strong too. That's the way you handle it. That's not the way Gunther handled it. He handled it that Otis's power moves meant nothing to him because he's not powerful. So you took away, that would be like taking away Rey Mysterio's high flying and say your high flying never connects with me because I'm too quick. Okay, then you've sold nothing from Rey Mysterio. This did more to hurt Otis's push, or if he has one. And it didn't help Chad Gable either, Mike, because clearly the same move that finished off Vinci didn't even keep Gunther down for an eighth of a second.
Right, and think about this. Look, Gunther is what, 250, maybe?
Yep,
you know,
maybe.
Otis is what, 360?
Yep.
You know, and very athletic and strong, and they're about the same age and all that stuff. But, yeah, him not selling, what would have happened if he wouldn't have sold, say, the Big Show? You know,
yeah.
Being 7'5", you know, 400 pounds, and and all that stuff. Or better yet, what if he would have not sold, Mark Henry, who's supposedly the world's strongest man, right?
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. He's obviously, Mark Henry is stronger than him. Obviously, the Big Show is stronger than him. If he doesn't go down like a shot while taking the WMD, then what does that do for the Big Show? That's exactly what happened. I mean, look.
That is exactly what happened, and I got news. You can't continue to do this. Now, he's going to hide behind, well, that's what I'm being told to do. Okay, fine, but the bottom line of the situation is wrestlers are going to get frustrated with this eventually. If they're going to lose to you, that's fine, but my goodness, can you at least sell something? Can you at least sell whatever it is that they're supposed to be infamous for? Can you imagine if Gunther and Roman Reigns fought and Roman Reigns speared him and Gunther kicked out at half a one and rolled out of the ring? What do you think would happen? Backstage, there'd be problems. And they'd say, well, hold the phone. You're not Brock Lesnar. You don't look like Brock Lesnar. You don't have the credentials of Brock Lesnar. And you can't be doing this. You can't be underselling every single thing all of our wrestlers do. You can't do it. At least he could have had Vinci and Kaiser roll him out of the ring when he got hit by the German suplex. So it looked like, wow, that would be lights out for Gunther too. Now we're left with, well, if Chad Gable hits him, with a big deal? Apparently has no effect on Gunther. It only manages to polish off Vinci. That's ludicrous. That kind of stuff should never happen, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, with this whole Gunther thing. He was trying to pull a Taz card, not selling or anything. That's not going to work.
Yeah, well, we'll see what ends up happening with this. It's starting to wear a little thin, in my opinion. Anyway, Drew McIntyre is being interviewed backstage. He's asked, what is next for Drew McIntyre? And Matt Riddle comes up and says, oh, well, the Viking Raiders are issuing an open challenge, and I thought maybe we could be a tag team and we could call ourselves Edinbros. Drew McIntyre doesn't exactly look thrilled about it, but says, look, here's the deal. If you can't find anybody else, then I guess I'll do it. And then they played up, well, it looks like McIntyre's not going to do it because here's Matt Riddle in there by himself, but eventually McIntyre's music hits and down comes McIntyre. As God is my witness, I thought this is where McIntyre was turning heel. He kept waiting for the hot tag, and I said, when he gets his hot tag, he's going to attack Matt Riddle. He's not going to attack the Viking Raiders, but he didn't. Now, I've heard that Drew McIntyre has not yet signed the contract we thought he signed, that they're still working on it. But he's come back to work in the meantime. That's not a good sign. Drew McIntyre is saying it's no longer about the money. It's about being in an angle that is worthy of some attention, such as the bloodline. I would imagine that this is the beginning of that angle. Backstage, after they win and they beat the Viking Raiders, which the Viking Raiders are now just a joke, actually. But now that they've beaten the Viking Raiders, Matt Riddle says, oh, man, we should form a real tag team, and we could be the tag team champions. New Day hears this, takes umbrage to it, and says, wait a minute, we've just come back, and I think you're stepping ahead of yourself. You've got one match, one win, congratulations. That'll make you top guys. That doesn't make you top contenders for the tag team title. You know how many times we've held them, to which Matt Riddle challenges them. Without Drew McIntyre's permission, or accepts the challenge, I should say, without Drew McIntyre's permission, McIntyre does not look happy about it. My assumption here, Mike, is that we're going to see Drew McIntyre turn on Matt Riddle.
Absolutely, and that's a good idea. I mean, look, you know, it could help both of these two guys, make him a heel, and it could. Matt Riddle is good for one thing, and he's one of these guys that can engender, if done right, can engender people to feel sorry for him, thus engendering him to be being popular. If Drew McIntyre is a guy who can do both, either be a heel or a face and do them well, and he's a guy that you can get that type of somebody to like, somebody like Matt Riddle, you know? And this is a good deal for both of these two guys. And yeah,
I think so too. You gotta do something with McIntyre. I don't think he's as popular as people think he is anymore. And it's a good idea if they plan on it. Which again, I don't know. I thought they were going to do it this time, but if they plan on it and they stick to it, I think this is a very good thing for both people. Now I do think Matt Riddle's not winning that feud. They've pretty much given up on Matt Riddle. But, Mike, you're 1,000% right when you say Matt Riddle is good for one thing particularly, and that is getting the sympathy of the crowd. See, he seems like a fun, cool, harmless sort of guy. So when somebody does something really bad to him, you feel bad for him because you say, oh, man, you know, he's relatively harmless. He's always upbeat and positive, and, you know, he was sort of idolizing Drew McIntyre, saying we could be a team like, you know, me and Randy were, and we became really good friends, and look what Drew did because Drew's an asshole. So that will work. That will work. Todd, didn't you think it was going to be this week, though? Because I sure did.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, when I watched it the other night, after the match was over, he was raising Riddle's hand, and looks like he... I thought he was going to attack him after the match was over.
Even after the match, yeah, that's a very good point, because they were raising each other's hand and things. I'm like, oh, he's still going to attack him. But he didn't. I think it'll happen during the New Day match, so should be interesting. Backstage, we get Raquel Rodriguez talking to Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. And she says, I haven't been cleared yet. I've been trying to get cleared, but giving Indy Hartwell a chance to go out there and face Rhea Ripley, I don't know what to tell you. Indy Hartwell is a very good wrestler. You've just thrown her to the wolves, basically. This was a glorified squash match. She had a little tiny bit of offense, but other than that, this was absolute one-sided squash match type stuff. So there goes Indy Hartwell. See, the thing, folks, is this. I know you want to make Rhea Ripley look extraordinarily good, but you don't make someone look extraordinarily good by making everyone else look bad. You make somebody look extraordinarily good by saying, look how good they are, and she still won the deal. That's what Roman Reigns does. Oh, I made Sami Zayn look like $1 million, but I won. I made Kevin Owens look like $1 million, but I won. made Brock Lesnar look like $1 million, but I won. Therefore, it looks like you really beat somebody. The way you're doing this with Rhea Ripley, it looks like, oh, well, we're just throwing her jabrons. So this is the rub we get on Indy Hartwell, is that Indy Hartwell's a jabron, and that's not true. You've got to stop protecting Rhea Ripley this much. You got to tell her, no, go ahead and sell. The idea behind this is you're good enough to overcome these people who are really good. Not you're being fed jabrons that anybody could beat in 30 seconds. Otherwise, it doesn't make her look good, Mike.
Right, and think about this. This is exactly what WCW did with Goldberg, with Gabe Goldberg, the big head. He put him against all these guys, and then he beat them, and then he said, okay, am I going to keep this up? And they say, yes, and he started beating Sting and all these other people, and gave him the big head, right? So I don't think her ego is that way, but again, they're handling this all wrong. And here's why I know this, because you look at Indy Hartwell. Indy Hartwell is not Candice LeRae. Candice LeRae is a pixie. She's a smile. She's, you know, what's her name? She's Alexa Bliss size. Indy Hartwell is what, 5'6", 5'7", 5'8"? You know, she's a big girl.
Right.
And so you don't want to mess up her being a big girl by having her lose her first match. I mean, look, Ric Flair had that habit of making people look like $1 million but still winning.
Absolutely. That's a great point, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. No, if it's just some local talent, you don't want to make local talent look good. If it's a squash match, I get it. If it's somebody like, you know, I don't know, Tozawa, I get it. But if you're bringing someone in the Federation, let's say I'm a top guy, and you say, look, we're bringing this Cameron Grimes in, and we're going to do something with him. I mean, he's not going to be a world beater, but we're going to do something with him. So you're going to be fighting him. Then squashing him is out of the question. I got to say, well, what is it about him that I need to sell? And then I'll sell the hell out of that for a few minutes. And then I'll polish him off and, you know, give him the rub of saying, whoa, you know, look at that guy. I didn't expect that out of this guy. Who the hell is this guy? Right? Did Roman Reigns not do that with Logan Paul? Roman Reigns said, this is going to be the easiest fight of my life. I'm fighting some guy who's not even a pro wrestler. He thinks he's a tough guy. He's got one chance in the world, and that is if he throws a knockout punch and hits me, which that's never, ever going to happen in a million years. And I'm going to embarrass him in Saudi Arabia and send him back, and he's never going to want to be a pro wrestler again. What did Roman Reigns do? He sold him to the point where when the match was over after he won, he told Paul Heyman, I never want to fight that guy again. I never want to see him again. That's selling him. Rhea Ripley's job, which he was told not to do, I'm sure, but Rhea Ripley's job should have been last night to make Indy Hartwell look like she almost upset her. Like Rhea Ripley took her for granted, and this is not somebody you take for granted. And on a given night, Indy Hartwell could potentially beat Rhea Ripley, not throw her in like local talent. Zelina Vega gave her a better fight. So how are we supposed to expect that Indy Hartwell is going to be a world beater now, Tom?
It's really sad since Indy Hartwell was lighting it up in NXT and she's made to look like a buffoon. I mean, you know, again, this was one of those matches that should have been, like, let at least give Indy the respect enough to get some offense in. She got nothing. And that's pretty sad. They seem to be doing this with the NXT talent they bring up. And it's almost like they're doing it on purpose. If I didn't know any better, I'd say they were.
It sounds it because the former tag team champions were massacred backstage too. I don't get it. I just don't get this. The rule of wrestling is never make your opponent look awful because then you just beat somebody awful. If you make your opponent look good, then when you beat them, the assumption is you beat somebody good. But whatever. Shinsuke Nakamura is doing an interview. I love Shinsuke Nakamura as a heel. He's good as a face, too, but I love Shinsuke Nakamura as a heel, and I'm going to tell you why I do. His body language as a heel is awesome, and he's a different kind of heel. He's a different kind of heel. Seth Rollins comes out to confront him and says, all you needed to do was ask. You didn't need to attack me. I had the utmost respect for you until last week, and all you had to do was ask for a title shot, and I gladly would have given you one. But you didn't. Instead, you sneak attacked me, tried to make a name for yourself that way. Shinsuke Nakamura is kind of oblivious to all this. And then before he leaves, after realizing Seth Rollins is going to give him his title shot, whispers something in his ear. And Seth Rollins, to his credit, sells it very well. No idea what it's supposed to be, but I guarantee it's some kind of a gimmick. And then while Seth Rollins is contemplating what Shinsuke Nakamura said, Nakamura sneak attacks him. The reason I love Nakamura is I never feel like I'm sneak attacking him because I don't like him, or I'm sneak attacking him because I'm just an evil guy. It always seems like when Nakamura's the heel, he's doing it because he's playing a mind game with you. And he always has that smile on his face like, yeah, I know that was a bad thing to do, but there's a reason I did it. It always appears as though there's more of a reason than I'm just a bully. It's more of a, this is a calculated plan. And I love Nakamura as a heel, Mike.
I love him as a heel, too, but they're going to have to finesse this because he's one of these guys that if they don't finesse it right, he's going to be one of these cool heels, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want that. You don't want him as a cool heel. Now, granted, I know where they're going. You know, he's all bitter about, okay, I've been here a while. Everybody's been ahead of me. I haven't got my shot, all this stuff, which is a good gimmick, right? And it's kind of true. You know, it's kind of, he's been here. He's been muddling around the mid-card, getting his here and there, being all cool and all this stuff, but hadn't got his shot yet. Hadn't been able to come close to getting a shot at at whatever title, right? You know, at the big title, right? So, and I understand what they were doing with Roman Reigns, okay? He wasn't going to get a shot at Roman Reigns' title. I understand that.
Right.
But this new title is different.
Well, listen, there could be a unique storyline to this. I have had two separate people who don't even know each other write to me and say, I watched that tape in slow motion over and over again to see what he whispered in his ear, and it looks like he said, I'm going to let you win. I don't know what that means. If that's the case, and that's what he said, I don't know what's going on. And if that is what he said, that's very intriguing, because what does that mean? What the hell does that mean? So whatever happens, they're going to ask Seth Rollins. You know they're going to ask Seth Rollins. I doubt he's going to say anything. I think he's going to say, well, I'm not going to reveal it or whatever, but it's a very interesting – I don't believe I've ever seen that before, Tom.
No, and this seems to be what WWE is doing with as the Bloodline storyline is really successful. They know now they can start these – long-term feuds. It's intriguing because nobody knows what was said, and Seth Rollins was he was visibly concerned. And Shinsuke speaking in Japanese is so annoying, and he knows it, and the fans know it.
Right.
And the fans were all over him. I was all over him. I was like, God damn it, we're back to this again.
Yeah, it's actually kind of listen, he could do a great job. He could do a great job. We'll see what ends up happening. Now, speaking of great jobs and not doing it, we then get Becky Lynch and Trish Stratus up. I do not expect Trish Stratus at her age to put on the type of matches that she put on when she was 28, 30 years old. I already know that's not going to happen. But at this stage of the game, if this is the best you can come up with, this is not good. Good. And then you have a ridiculous stipulation. Indy Hartwell cannot be at ringside or can in any way, shape, or form. Okay. Well, they're double counted out. The match is over. They then go fight near the concessions, and Indy Hardwell ends up being there, beating the hell out of Becky Lynch. And Adam Pearce says, well, you're lucky that it didn't take place in the ring. She wasn't at ringside. Adam, the match was over. If she had have attacked her in the ring, she didn't attack her during the match. The match was over. It was a double countout. If they went back to the ring and Indy Hardwell came down and planted her with a chair, that stipulation is over when the match is over. So I don't even understand that. That's just silly. That's just bad writing. But now we hear, well, you're going to be in a steel cage. Oh, God. I'm sorry to tell you, this feud has done nothing for me. And it's done absolutely nothing for Trish Stratus. Now, Zoe Stark, on the other hand, maybe she's getting a rub from it. I don't know. Maybe she's getting a rub from it. But I don't think so, because Becky Lynch has beaten her. And she's beaten Becky Lynch once, it's true. But listen, I love Trish Stratus. And truth be known, she really was one of the very, very first quote-unquote divas to say, I'm taking this seriously and I'm really going to learn how to wrestle. And if you don't believe me, go back and watch. Because she went from, I'm just wearing a long trench coat down to ringside and showing my boobs, to I'm doing Matrix-style moves in the ring. I remember saying at the time, holy cow, she must have went into some training. She's really getting good, and she was. So she definitely, along with Lita, paved the way. Now, again, you're probably going to see Lita come back. I mean, it's pretty obvious that Zoe Stark and Trish Stratus are going to be around a little bit, and Lita has been sneak attacked, and she hasn't retaliated. I think they're worried about Lita and Trish Stratus having a match based upon what we're seeing from Trish Stratus. I think they're saying, you know, if we put them both in the ring at the same time with nobody else to make the motion and everything, this could be a really, really bad match, and it could end up hurting their reputations. It's possible. That's why it should be a tag team match. Zoe Stark and Trish Stratus, Lita and Becky Lynch. And I believe that will happen. But this match, Tom, I'm sorry. This match was a stinker. Absolute 100% stinker.
It was complete garbage, I agree. And for Adam Pearce to chime in and say, well, you're lucky this didn't happen in the ring, they got double counted out so she could do whatever she wants. The gloves are off now. That's silly. You know, I did comment on this on the thread. So this is a perfect time for Lita to come back. Because where was Lita? Where is Lita? Lita was knocked down to the ground in backstage area, and last time we saw her, she was injured and looking for and rolling around on the backstage floor like she was looking for a contact lens. Well, I've seen people get way more hurt and make a return the following week. Lita's been gone for months. So when are you going to bring Lita back? Why is Becky on her own? I mean, Raquel Rodriguez, has a messed up knee, and she keeps coming out to try to get one up on Rhea. But we haven't seen Lita.
The only thing I can think of, Tom, is that perhaps they're having Lita go into some serious training to get in shape to really do a really good match. Maybe that's it, because you're right. This is ridiculous. And the heat is leaving. See, that's the thing. There's not even that much heat anymore. And Becky's losing her popularity over this. She's losing her position. Becky Lynch's position was, I'm at the top of the card. At any second, I could be the women's champion. And now she's in a pointless feud with a 40-something-year-old woman who she's not beating, up to now anyway. And this is not doing anything for her. It's not doing anything for her at all. So I'm a little worried about this, Mike. I don't think this is going to – we're not trying to promote Trish Stratus here. She's not doing anything. So why in the world are we sticking Becky Lynch in these really not-so-good matches and just undercutting what Becky Lynch could be?
I really don't know, and that's the thing. I mean – And yeah, where is Lita? Lita, I mean, I tend to agree with what you just said. They're putting her in training because they saw that she had a bunch of ring rust, and she said, and they said, well, you're gonna have to knock that ring rust off, so we're gonna put you in training for a couple of months until, and she'll be back. I guarantee you, she'll be back. Now, we know this match is gonna take place at SummerSlam, right? Is it SummerSlam or SummerSlam, right? So
which one? The Steel Cage match with Becky Lynch taking place next week.
Next week, I'm talking about Lita. I'm talking about when she might come back and get involved.
Oh.
I mean, we could see her next week with that Steel Cage match because those things are generally a no disqualification, no, you know, count out.
Right.
You got to feet hit the floor, you know, and all that stuff. We could absolutely see her involved in that next week. But again, I don't think that's a big enough stage for that to be done. I would think you get her involved in a pay-per-view match, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. If Lita's coming back, it will be some kind of a pay-per-view match. Absolutely. Anyway, we then get to Cody Rhodes and Finn Balor. And I'm going to give this a little more credit than I should because, listen, I'm not a big Finn Balor fan. I think he's boring. But I see what they're doing with him now. They keep playing up. Dominic's a champion. Rhea's a champion. Damian Priest has the money in the bank. He could potentially be the champion. But poor Finn has nothing. And it's starting to get to him. I think, clearly seeing that we are going to possibly see Finn Balor be the one that's going to turn. Although, I'm confused because of the J.D. McDonough thing. He's clearly a heel. Clearly a heel. So maybe it'll be Dom. Maybe it'll be Damian Priest still. But something's going to happen. Now, my assumption is J.D. McDonough is going to be welcomed into the Judgment Day. Based on what we saw, Finn Balor clearly was going to lose. Damian Priest once again blew it. Pushes the briefcase way too hard, and it goes through Finn Balor's legs. Cody Rhodes gets it, blasts Finn Balor with it for the pin. But then, in the turmoil that happens afterwards, Sami Zayn comes down to make the save. J.D. McDonagh is the one that pulls their ass out of the fire. And you can clearly see Damian Priest give him a look like, okay, well, maybe he's not useless. So something's going to give here. Either Finn Balor is going to try to get them to accept him, and then they are going to turn on Judgment Day, and it's all going to be sort of a plot on Finn Balor's part, or this is a setup completely against one of them, because quite clearly McDonagh's a heel. But you saw Finn Balor instantly forgive Damian Priest, right? Didn't see that before. You didn't see that before. Last time he tried to pass the briefcase and he got the curb stomp on it, he was all about, you know, this is your fault. He didn't do any of that this time because J.D. McDonagh was there. And it was almost like he was saying the more important thing is not to blame him now. The more important thing is to get McDonagh in his good graces. So I think that's where the storyline is going, is they're going to try to get McDonagh in here, and Finn is going to sort of campaign for him to be another member. And that's going to be the straw that eventually breaks the camel's back, Tom.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was an okay match. I liked the ending because it makes it seem like J.D. McDonagh is like the foil for Finn almost. Damian Priest. Like he's doing it on purpose. Because he doesn't want him to win. He's almost like he's jealous of Finn. I'm not sure why that would be the case, but I understand the first time, but he keeps doing it, and it's going to lead to something. And it's, as far as I'm concerned, I don't like Finn Balor. I think he's boring. He doesn't have the right expressions for the gimmick he's portraying. He doesn't have the right sell. It's boring.
Yeah, I think what this gimmick is going to be, Tom, maybe I'm wrong, but I think they're wavering back and forth. I don't know if the WWE writers know what the gimmick's going to be, but I think they've settled on one of two things. Either Damian Priest is legitimately trying to help Finn Balor, and Finn Balor is unthankful and doesn't seem to be able to get the help. You know, he's the one screwing it up. He let it go between his legs when he could have got it. He didn't call for it at SummerSlam and then did. Or they're going for Damian Priest knows that if Finn Balor wins the title, Damian Priest promised he would never cash in on him. Which means that Damian Priest's briefcase means a zero. So Damian Priest is purposely screwing it up because he doesn't want Finn to win the title. One of those two things, either Finn is ungrateful and he's too clumsy to get the help that Damian Priest is trying to offer, and then blames it on Damian Priest, who's just trying to help. Or Damian Priest is purposely attempting to stop Finn Balor from winning any titles. But then again, Cody Rhodes, that's no title. Why would he not want him to beat Cody Rhodes? You'd think if he was going to try to prove that he was on Finn's side, it would be versus Cody. I could see if it was Seth Rollins. So it's a little complex. I'm not sure the story writers actually know where they're going with this, but I do think they're going to add McDonough, Mike, and from there we'll see where the story goes.
All right. Let's play a little thing from Sesame Street called Which One of These Things Doesn't Belong? Okay, Rhea Ripley, heel. Dominic Mysterio, mega heel. Katie McDonough, heel. Damian Priest, heel. And Finn Balor. Now, which one of these things doesn't belong?
Yeah, well, Balor's been a heel in his past, and Priest has been a face, though, in the past. So those are a little iffy.
Right, but as of right now, which one of them don't belong is Finn Balor, you know. Now, could they turn both either or? Yeah, they could turn either or, but right now, all those other people are heel or heel personas, and Finn Balor is kind of in that gray area right now.
Starting to get some sympathy a little bit. See, here's what I think might happen. If I put on my Nostradamus cap, I think J.D. McDonagh is going to join the Judgment Day, and they are going to win the tag team championships, J.D. McDonagh and Finn Balor, so they can say, we've got all the championships. All Damian Priest needs to do is cash in successfully, and we will have all of the championships. We have the tag team championship. Dominic has the North American championship. Rhea has the women's title. All now the emphasis is on Damian Priest to cash in. And if he cashes in unsuccessfully or fails, maybe he's the one that gets the boot. Maybe he's the one that gets the gang jumped. And then Rhea Ripley could say, you know, I was constantly in his face telling him to calm down. Him and Dominic, you know, because remember, Dominic was asked to back him up, right? And Dominic said nothing. So I'm thinking that's what's going to happen, Todd. I think we might see J.D. McDonagh and Finn Balor get those tag team championships.
I think you're absolutely right there, like you said. And like you said, with J.D. McDonagh and Finn Balor there, they could be like an Irish tag team or something, and a heel tag team as Irishmen. And you're probably going to see Damian Priest probably cash in on Seth Rollins or Shinsuke Nakamura, whoever the champion will be in the future.
See, that could very well happen. That could be something that Shinsuke was talking to Seth Rollins about, too. I don't know. I just think that that's what they're trying to do with the Judgment Day, is to try to make them as dominant as the Bloodline. And in order to do that, introducing McDonough would seem to me to be the best friend of Finn Balor, would seem to me to be the guys that eventually will go against KO and Sammy. That would seem to make sense. Here's what does not make sense. You literally have the tag, you literally have Sonya Deville hurt and stripped of the title. Chelsea Green says, well, I think I should hold auditions for a new tag team partner. I didn't lose the belt after all. Since when is this a thing? Since when can you do that? You know how many people have been stripped? They didn't say, well, I just had to hand somebody else the title. And Piper Niven comes in and basically says, I'm a new tag team champion. Since when can you do that? Now, I'm all for Piper Niven having a spot. But my God, the rules are so arbitrary. You've ruined this show three times with weird rule things. Number one, the Becky Lynch thing. Like I said, Zoe Stark could have came down to ringside and beat the hell out of Becky Lynch. The match was over. The stipulation doesn't continue after the match is over. Then, for whatever God knows reason, Piper Niven could just be the tag team champion whenever she wants to be. And Raquel Rodriguez can't get cleared weeks after, but Sami Zayn runs down the next week. Totally not cleared, but it doesn't matter. And again, just says, I'm having a match. I don't know what to tell you. What I do know is this. There were some elements of a storyline continuity with J.D. McDonough possibly joining Judgment Day, so I'll give that a thumbs up. Shinsuke Nakamura whispering whatever the hell he whispered in Seth Rollins' ear is clearly a gimmick of some kind. I'll give that a thumbs up. Everything else on this show was boring. To me, anyway. I think you've undermined Becky Lynch to the point where she's irrelevant. You're ruining Chad Gable. He's not going to win. And on top of that, you're ruining him with this, oh, thank you, every 2 seconds. You got to tell him to stop that. You've completely ruined Otis, because now he doesn't even look like he's strong. Apparently Gunther's stronger than him. So if Gunther's stronger than him and more powerful, then what's there to fear about Otis? Can't wrestle, and he's not that strong, obviously, right? So whatever. That was a mistake. The Viking Raiders are garbage now, so that's a mistake. I think you just should have turned Drew McIntyre this week, not next week or 6 weeks from now. Don't play this out. Just turn him. Just turn them. That would have been a really good highlight this week. A lot of it was boring. So I'll give them credit for the two things I said. I'm still giving this a C-. I think it was a pretty weak episode overall, Mike.
I got to give it a – I'm going to give it a flat C, because the other thing that I like, other than what you said, is basically what the New Day said. Wait, how do you think – you deserve a championship shot over us. We've been the championship how many times? We've been the champions how many times? Which is true, you know. At one point they were carrying, them and the Usos were carrying the tag team division, so it's true. So I'm going to give it a little bit better than you, and a C+. And you're right about the – and by the way, I looked it up. Indy Hartwell is 5'9" and about 140 pounds, which is damn near Charlotte.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, there was no excuse in the world to throw Indy Hartwell to the wolves. Why did you think that made Rhea Ripley look good, to just squash Indy Hartwell? It made Rhea Ripley look like she beat somebody that most of the fans didn't even watch in NXT, so they don't know who the hell she is. So they're just like, oh, she's a jabron. Instead of letting her have plenty of offense so the fans could say, I don't know who this girl is, but she almost beat Rhea Ripley. So, okay, she didn't, but, man, she came close. Let's keep our eye on her. No, now people are like, oh, you can throw her away. Huge mistake. Huge booking mistake. Todd, what's your rating this week?
I'm going to give it a C-.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I wasn't too thrilled with it. I was really, really upset with Gunther, too. I mean, he should know better than this. How about if you did that to him? How about if you said, I'm not selling your chop? You chop me? How about if Otis did that? How about if he chopped Otis and Otis was just like, that doesn't hurt. Gunther would be saying, yeah, he's ruining my my image. Well, you ruined Gunther. You ruined Otis's. He shoulder blocks you and you stand there. It's unbelievable. I get it. You're tougher than Sheamus. You're stronger than Otis. You're a better wrestler than Chad Gable. I mean, come on. You're not going to sell anybody anything? Tom, what's your rating this week?
I'll give it a C, a C, middle C, because I definitely did enjoy the Matt Riddle, Drew gimmick. What do you call them? Glassbro? And Drew trying to shut him up, and he was like, wait, but you keep talking, and he just like went, shh, that was pretty good. And you really don't know where that's going. Is he just going to go with it, or is he going to turn? It seems obvious again, like he's going to turn on Matt Riddle in a minute after they lose, but he might not. And I really enjoyed that because I like the fact that they're doing something with Drew, getting him involved in a storyline that could have legs.
I'm giving him this 1 week. I could have gave him a D because I was not entertained by most of this stuff, but I'm giving him this 1 week to say, okay, you reset last week. This week you're starting to tell some stories that are a little bit different. I'll give him one more week. But next week, you've got to come out on all cylinders. The best things on this show, in my opinion, probably the opening segment where we got introduced to J.D. McDonagh and this whole thing started where it's like, okay, he's being introduced to a storyline, so that's interesting. And then the Shinsuke Nakamura whispering whatever the hell he whispered in Seth Rollins' ear. Those two things were pretty cool. And they made me curious enough to say, that'll be interesting to see where this goes. The rest of this stuff felt like it was mailed into me. Anyway, folks, just a program note. We will be here on Friday. We will not be here Tuesday. We will not be here Sunday or Tuesday. I will be going away for a few days. So we will be here Friday, and then we'll be back next Friday and catch up with everything. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you on Friday.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.